The Caster TV Podcast. Talk about the best and the worst on the box.
It's the Custard TV Podcast. A bit different, though, this time. This is a special edition. So if you're expecting all the usual chat about British television, you're going to get it. Of course you are. You know I wouldn't let you down. We're also going to get a different take on the subject of television and its impact at the moment. Because one of my pet peeves, one of the things that almost makes my blood boil, is American dramas and American comedies. They're often formulaic, they're often over the top and over dramatized, or they're just plain silly. And for this edition of the podcast, I spoke to Gary from website The Vulture Hound, who is an avid viewer of American television and has barely a bad word to say about them. So, as we go into this conversation, which I recorded earlier, I want you to know that although I think UK television is possibly the best in the world, I am willing to speak to somebody who has completely opposite views to mine. This is what happened when we first spoke. Now, the reason I'm doing this is because I am speaking today to my arch nemesis. Well, you should be my arch nemesis.
I don't have an arch nemesis. There is a vacancy going.
Well, arch nemesis. You should organise that.
Yes.
There's no cape involved, aww, but if you want to come in costume, we can organise it.
They normally have like a metal helmet, or am I just thinking of that bloke out of X-Men? I don't know.
No, the reason I say you should be my arch nemesis is because you are primarily interested in American television.
Maybe I should do by way of introduction. Hello, my name is Gary. I co-do, is that right? Co-produce. Let's make it fancy.
I love co-do.
I did it at school as a younger child. Oh, no, that was judo. Sorry. I co-produce a podcast called the TV Drama Club with a friend of mine.
Yes.
And we talk about all things American that end up on British television. So that's, as you say, I suppose, is a counterpoint to your idea of everything that's on British television that's British.
I don't think that everything on British television is fantastic and should be held up the best television in the world. But it does, because I don't know if you realise, I do live in the States right now. You are talking to America.
Do you know, I did not know that.
And that is perhaps the reason why I wanted to talk to you.
Yes.
Because there you are, sat in the UK, and here I am, sat in the States, and we both care about places where we aren't.
What you're saying to me, Sam, Luke, is that really we should be changing lives. We should do like a cultural exchange.
We've probably got the same size feet and everything. We could probably organise that.
We could probably do something along those lines.
What is it about American television that particularly grabs you?
Primarily, it's the production value. I think if I was to say the biggest difference between British and American television is the amount of money and the amount of effort that goes into it by the Americans. That doesn't always equal quality, but I think particularly now, there's been a period of time, probably since the end of 24 up until now, where American television has been the new film. Better actors are becoming involved in television, better directors are becoming involved in television. You know, reference to the fact that Michael Mann has been directing episodes of Luck on HBO and that they've had various people involved. Who's that famous Italian one that did Raging Bull? And he did episodes of Boardwalk Empire as a director. Martin Scorsese.
You know, DeCampo.
No. I believe he wasn't involved in this one. He might have done the catering. Martin Scorsese. And I think that's the thing, is that in Britain, my perception, that you go into television to get into film. And that's how I've sort of seen British television, is that film actors go into film out of television. In America, the role has been reversed. All these big American film actors are coming into television.
What is also interesting to me, listening to you speak with a great deal of passion about American television, is a lot of it, unless you have access or the money or the inclination to add HBO or Showtime or one of those to your package on television, then you are left with an awful lot of pants TV. What's great about the UK is you can get your HBO shows on Channel 4, on things like that. So that is what the British perception is of American television, is that they are churning out things
of the quality of things like Luck and Boardwalk Empire, and so they're missing out all the drudgery that doesn't quite stand up at all.
Well, I think the thing is that the kind of the major networks in America, your ABC, NBC, Fox, CBS, and there's another one, ABC, or whatever, how I said that, NBC, they do produce a lot of good television. Let's not. But, of course, a lot of what they produce is aimed at advertising, is aimed at certain markets. So, I mean, a show that I would put up as an example is Criminal Minds. It follows a very specific genre, it has a big fan base, but is not going to get any new viewers in its sixth or seventh season, whatever it's in. You're watching that show now, and you've been watching it since series one. You're not going to start watching it next week. So no. They don't have to innovate, they don't have to create new things. They know what their audience likes, and they stick to it. Another one would be NCIS. It's in 9 series. I absolutely love that programme, but it's a total, what we refer to on our podcast, as a formula show. It has a formula, it sticks to it, it knows what it want, its audience wants, and that's it. But there's nothing wrong with that. But if there isn't that quality that perhaps, as you mentioned, that comes out of a Dexter or a Boardwalk Empire or a Shield or shows like that, or The Wire, that you know, you mentioned.
I suppose that's my main irritant. Most people think American television can't do wrong for the most part, and that irritates me. I know it shouldn't. I should have bigger things to worry about in life, but it does irritate me.
It's like
slightly.
A global recession and the end of the world coming, Luke. I don't know why you're worried about television.
Well, I'm hoping those two things may survive, both the recession and the end of the world.
They could, of course, be joined at the hip, you know, but we'll move on from that.
I'm sure even if television survives the end of the world, Last of the Summer Wine will still be on somewhere.
or The Walking Dead, which I suppose might be the American equivalent.
Can you compare things that I enjoy, like Silent Witness, for example, could you compare that to Criminal Minds? Do you think it's on the same level in your opinion?
I think the programmes have equally good writing. I think there is a deficit in the production values. British television can't help but having a budget feel. I mean, you go back to the Doctor Who's of the 60s or Torchwood that was on recently. You can't help escaping how the British have a kind of a more down market feel. But actually, some of that does play into its charm. Are you aware with a programme that came out last year called The Shadow Line?
Now, I want to talk about The Shadow Line, but I want to also hit myself with a brick. Because I had to come... Brick was just there. I was going to hit myself with something else, but brick just happened to come.
Fair enough.
I didn't see The Shadow Line, and the reason I didn't see it was just completely by accident. It was on in the summer. Mm. I was moving a lot in the summer, and The Shadow Line just... I just missed it. It doesn't happen very often, and if I die tomorrow, I will have died without seeing The Shadow Line, and that is one of the things that I regret.
I would highly recommend it, because The Shadow Line and another programme that was on the BBC over the summer last year called The Hour are just great examples of...
The Hour was fantastic.
Yeah, great examples of things the British can do that the Americans can't. Americans, outside of The Wire... cannot do slow programmes. Everything has to be bang. A programme like Hawaii 5-0 is so fast in its pace and its style, you can watch an episode in a blink. I mean, I do enjoy it, I do like it, but it's a show that it's a pacey show. The Shadow Line and The Hour were meandering. They both went off on wild tangents and took you in places. They told a story, similar to, as I say, how The Wire did, which was such a unique piece of American television. But those are great examples of what you call quintessentially British. You know, one was about spies, one was about the Suez Crisis and the BBC. You can't do those in America. They don't have that kind of background of history for them to do it.
What do you think? I mean, if we're talking about just great... Because the BBC drama department, you have to admit, has stepped up a lot towards the end of last year and this year. I mean, Luther is coming back. Luther is actually being co-produced by BBC America for the third series. Mm. And that's actually done really well. You can buy that on DVD here.
Luther is a what you call a throwback to the days of the Sweeney and things like that. It draws from that kind of violence that used to be on British television in the 70s and 80s. And Luther very much drew on that kind of style of television. And again, I think up until things like The Walking Dead and shows like that, American television was never so edgy. But no. Certainly in recent years, I mean, apart from Twin Peaks, which is, again, a very quirky, almost British style of drama, which was very much a one-off. But, you know, those kind of shows don't resonate well with Americans. I mean, Twin Peaks only lasted into its second series, and then they got bored of it.
Would you agree, though, that British television characters like Luther and like, I don't know, I'm trying to think of Cracker, for example, they just have a more realistic feel about them. They feel like... and I think a lot of that is to do with the way British television works with the one writer as opposed to a committee. Somebody spoke to me once before and said, when you've got one writer, you're getting one person's opinion on something, whereas when you've got a committee of writer, you're getting nobody's opinion on
nothing. Look at the successful shows in America, and as I've mentioned, The Wire, a programme called Justified, those are programmes that are done differently, where you're quite right, they have one writer-creator who writes consistently throughout the show. The Shield is another, Sons of Anarchy is another, where, yes, there might be a writer's room, but it's actually one person's vision, which is how it's done in England, as you say, where it is one person that creates it and writes it. They might get other people to help, but there's against this writer's room. And let's face it, you know, I mean, I'm watching the final series of House at the moment, and it's like a clip show almost, because they've gone nowhere with the plot for a couple of series, and this eighth series, although it's quite nostalgic, it's going nowhere, because they have to pump out 24 of them.
Well, that's another thing for me as well. I think that when a show like House becomes successful and they get a slot, House will be on in that slot regardless of whether there's a new episode or not.
Yeah.
So you get stuck in a loop where you know every Tuesday or Monday House will be on regardless. So there's not a great deal of variety, which irritates me. For example, when Luther finishes, it's only four episodes again this year. But when that happens, when that finishes, they're not going to go back and show a load of Luther repeats. Something new and exciting will be on, hopefully, after it.
And that does create that kind of...
I do appreciate that.
That does also create what I call that big fight mentality. British television, to me, is almost like the old big fight game, where the buzz in the UK around Sherlock... and I'm sure you had the same thing from your point of view when you were watching it.
Sure.
It was a television event. You parked yourself with your family in front of that television, you watched it, you talked about it, you tweeted it, you went to work the next day and you talked about it. When there's 24 episodes of something, what's the point in talking about it the next day? More does not always necessarily mean better.
And also, of course, they go into what is known in the American television trade as syndication, which means they will go on outside of their normal slot. You might find the Big Bang Theory on at 6 in the evening, and then again at 9 where the new episodes sit. So if you're not careful, you're flicking channels, seeing the same thing over and over again. I don't know whether an English audience would quite put up with that. I mean, the closest you've got to that is what I call the new tricks safety tape, which is when the BBC think, we don't have anything to stick on a Friday, but new tricks does really well for us, so let's stick in the new tricks emergency tape and have people singing, it's all it's okay.
Dennis Waterman can sing the theme tune, write the theme tune.
I know.
Thank you, Little Britain. I would say that there are two major exceptions in America, and they're finished now, but they were two major exceptions where somebody very cleverly, well, three exceptions I'll go with, three very cleverly said, okay, if we're going to have 24 episodes or something, let's properly tell a story. One was 24, which when it came out was a genius idea. Somebody worked out, we make 24 episodes, oh, there's 24 hours in a day. That is genius. The other two are Heroes and Prison Break, and they are shows that in their first season came out with a story arc that ran over 24 episodes, where you got a beginning, middle and end. And that, again, is a perfect use of the 24 episode genre. The problem is, when those shows got renewed and given second and third series, the writers hadn't planned out the story arcs as well. So they fitted back into, as we've mentioned, that kind of like, that very comfortable arc of, well, we'll just keep telling the same story, we'll come up with a new twist, but we won't actually go anywhere, we'll drop certain ideas. But the first series of Prison Break and Heroes are absolute genius, because somebody has taken those ideas, taken that long-standing idea of 24 episodes and used it properly for one story arc. You know, will they get out of the prison? Will they get to Dealey Plaza, save the cheerleader, save the world? Somebody with a brain in America said, we've got to fill this time, let's really fill it.
But do you think, I mean, it's sort of seen as cool to like things like Prison Break and Heroes and things, but do you think there's a reason why BBC One wouldn't stick something like that on at 9 o'clock?
Well, Heroes did come to the BBC. The first series was shown on BBC Two at about that time. I know afterwards they butchered it a bit and moved it around the schedule, but I think realistically what's happened in this country is that money, again, has played a big part in how television schedulers. The BBC, because of the fact that it's, you know, privately, you know, publicly owned, has to produce a certain amount of television under that remit, which no channel in America has to do. Apart from maybe PBS. No. And the BBC and ITV, and particularly ITV in recent years, just don't buy anything of American television. They haven't got the money to buy it, and it's cheaper for them to churn out, you know, 12 episodes of, as you say, what was it, New Tricks?
I just don't know. I mean, Pan Am, which they BBC bought, they tried so hard to get people into that, and it didn't work. So I wonder whether they feel their fingers have been burnt a bit.
Well, I think they're trying. They were trying to find a replacement for Mad Men. Mad Men was a big hit for BBC Four, which is very much a cool channel over here. It shows a lot of the Danish dramas, which I really do like. Things like The Killing and Borgen, and a new one coming out called The Bridge, which I heartily recommend if you can stand subtitled shows. And Mad Men was a big hit both in America and in the UK. But of course what's happened is a cable channel flashed the cash and bought it. So I think what the BBC was trying to do with Pan Am was find out if a show could be like Mad Men in its style and its sophistication, and hopefully it would take off. But of course the ratings in America plummeted. The BBC then butchered it in the schedule and put double episodes back to back almost once a week or twice a week.
Yeah.
And how do you grow an audience like that?
It was a strange idea to schedule. I don't know whether they were thinking there's a lot of episodes, we've got to get through them.
Well, I think they knew it had been cancelled. I think they knew it had been canned, and therefore they just thought, well, we might as well keep it and put it on, but let's rush through it. Well, I think American television schedulers do run a certain way, as you say. I don't know exactly, maybe you can help me with this bit, but you do have the bigger shows are thrown on a Thursday night, and there is something, obviously Saturday night is a big sports night, so that, and then Sundays is a big sports night as well, so big shows
Saturday
will get shown.
Saturday night's always fascinated me, because Saturday night, of course, growing up, I grew up on things like Noel's House Party and things like that, and Saturday night was always quite a big night. Saturday night on American television, it doesn't really have, there's no impact there.
It's
something
repeats.
Like The X Factor, which would just be ITV golden on a Saturday night, would never get shown on a Saturday night when it was on Fox.
Yeah.
Is it cool to like America? Do you think that's what it is? Do you think a lot of it is people think it's cool to like American television?
I'm not sure I do, because I think probably it's actually cooler now to like British television because of things like Sherlock and Doctor Who and Downton Abbey, you know, particularly winning awards in America, you know, getting that recognition worldwide. I think British television has come on as the cool thing. I think American television, because of the saturation over here and the choice, I think American television is more the norm. And I think the British programmes are the niche ones, are the cool ones.
Well, it interests me that last year with things like The Shadow Line, and there was a thing last year with John Sim called Exile, which was brilliant. And it interests me, though, that the BBC had seemed to make a firm stance to start every ad or every drama like that with the tagline, original British drama.
Yep. We did a whole thing on our podcast about this, and actually there was a wonderful trailer that had things like Luther, The Shadow Line, The Hour, and there was one about a butterfly or something. I can't remember what that was. The Pearl and the Butterfly or something like that. It was about six shows.
The Crimson Petal
that's
and
it.
White.
That's it. Do you do crosswords? Because my cryptic clue didn't really give that away.
They made the firm stance to make that shine as original British drama, and I wondered whether that was in a way to say, look, this is what we're making. Mm. Everybody seems to be raving about things like Heroes and Mad Men, House and Prison Break and things like that.
I think all UK television has upped its game. I mean, I think ITV, we talked about, you know, obviously Downton Abbey, we talk about films like things like Scott and Bailey. They did a wonderful, and I don't know whether you called it a prequel to the Moore series called Endeavour, which was very good. And I'm really hoping, I know they're making a series out of that, and a programme called DCI Banks, which
that
I really liked.
I spoke to Andrea Lowe, who was in that.
Oh, right.
She just thought, you know, that they had made something really special really different in the crime genre. And actually, it was DCI Banks, with ITV and BBC, they do pride themselves on crime drama, and DCI Banks did stand out for me last year as one of my favourites. I mean,
I think they messed up the last doubleheader a little bit. If a British drama doesn't have that storyline, in America you get 24 episodes, and as I said to you, that can sometimes be a curse and a blessing, because in 24 episodes, you can have your rubbish, but when you've only got six, everything's got to be quality.
This is the Custard TV Podcast.
So there you have it, the first segment, if you will, of my chat with Gary of the Vulture Hound website. Again, he's a huge advocate for the wonder of American television, has very little bad to say about the way schedulers run, about the way the networks control things, and about the sheer lack of variety that American audiences are privy to. And that's kind of what we're going to discuss, or what we did discuss, in the next installment of this special edition of the Custard TV Podcast. If you would like to get in touch with me before I post the next one to put your views across, I would absolutely love to hear from you. You can get in touch via my email, which is lukeinthecustard@gmail.com, or should you want to use social media, as we're in 2012, you can do that as well. You can get in touch via Twitter. My Twitter name is LukeCustardTV. I will post the next installment of my chat with Gary, and things get a little bit more heated as we argue our prospective points on the subject of Americans v. British. It gets very personal in the next installment of the Custard TV Podcast. Thanks for listening.